Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We are here until 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanch with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. I'm really excited to welcome my guest to the show this morning. His name is Don Nunley, and he is one of the authors of Steve McQueen, Le Mans in the Rearview Mirror. And it is a book about the making of what has now become a classic film called Le Mans. And it was a personal project for Steve McQueen, who had a passion for car racing. And upon its release, it was a staggering disaster. It was critically lauded, and it didn't make any money. And now, years later, is this terrific book, looking back at a movie that, in retrospect, is considered one of the best car racing movies ever made. And Don not only is the author of this book, but he has worked in the motion picture industry since 1959 as a property master, a set decorator, and a production designer. And he has worked on some he's got an amazing resume. And we're going to have fun talking about some of the movies that he's worked on and then talking about this book that is really fascinating and also really beautiful, because it's a big coffee table book which is loaded with pictures that no one else has seen and artifacts. It's just a terrific book. If you're a fan of Steve McQueen, you should get it. So let's welcome Don to the show. Don, welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Nick.
Yeah, it's so great to have you on. Well, first of all, let me ask you how you got into show business. You followed in the footsteps of your father, correct?
That's correct. I was having a break between college. I needed a job, and the studios were extremely busy because they just started making television. They couldn't supply enough help, and therefore the unions were out of people, and they were taking people off the streets, and I was lucky enough to get my foot in the door.
Wow, that's great. And I want to get to the book. The book is really, really great, Don, and it's beautifully put together. Like, it's a wonderful, colorful, terrific coffee table book that is not only a great piece of history about the making of this movie, but, man, there's so much stuff in there that people will just love to look at. I just wanted to say congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much. It was an interesting project to do after 47 years.
Right.
Go back and revisit and look at all my old pictures that I took.
Yeah, some really great stuff. I want to talk about some of the movies. Tell everybody what a property master does.
Well, it's pretty hard to sum up in a couple of sentences, but in general, he's in charge of everything in front of the camera except the actors. He crosses over and works sometimes with wardrobe, sometimes with transportation, and mostly with sets and set dressing. But he's in charge of having the right things for the right film, the period being correct, and the functionality, and teaching the actors usually how to use the item. So it's a pretty involved job. He's one of the first people hired when a movie is being formed, a production company is being formed, because he has so much preparation to do.
You know, I'm looking at your resume here and the credits that you have. You've worked on some of my favorite movies, Don, and I have to ask you about a few of them, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
You were the property master on Little Big Man, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. What was it like working on that film?
It was a real treat. I was just 29 years old, working with Arthur Penn, yeah. Dustin Hoffman, Faye Dunaway, Martin Balsam, Chief Dan George, all those people. And the period was exciting, 1855 through 1968 or 65.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, because that movie spanned such a long period of time. It must have been a challenge.
It was. We had three major battles, including the Battle of the Little Bighorn, the Washita, and weapons changed, and because of the period. And, of course, the whole idea of the picture is Jack Crabb, played by Dustin Hoffman, put himself into every major event that happened during his lifetime. And it's beautifully written. It was a really fun picture, because working with Arthur Penn, who had done Bonnie and Clyde, and Dean Tavalaris, the art director, they wanted it done right. And they backed me up every step of the way so I could actually do the film authentically. And because of that, it's now been recognized by the Library of Congress as significantly important, which makes me feel pretty good.
Yeah, you should. It's really, really great. You also worked on Save the Tiger, which is such a great film, and a different kind of film than much different kind of film than Little Big Man.
Yes, Jack Lemmon was an absolute perfect gentleman. He was a great guy. I did two films with him. I did that and War Between Men and Women. And of all the actors I worked with, I think I admired Jack the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was, I mean, he's one of my favorites. He was a national treasure. I do want to mention...
He's a fly fisherman. He's very important. He's a fly fisherman.
Oh, he is? Did you go fishing with him?
No, but we talk fishing a lot.
Okay. I have to ask you about sort of a string of movies that you did in the 70s that were some of my favorites of that time period. You worked on The Return of a Man Called Horace. You worked on Semi-Tough. You worked on Hooper, the Amityville Horror. And I just wanted to mention... Damnation Alley. Now, being the property master on that movie, first of all, that movie has one of the craziest vehicles I have ever seen in film history. What was that thing like?
Well, George Barris, the famous car builder in California who did the Munsters car, did the Batmobile, we hired him to come up with something that could be futuristic, something nobody had ever seen before. And as you remember, the vehicle kind of looked like a cross between a Humvee and a overstuffed Volkswagen, I guess.
Right.
But it was a strange film because it was after the atom bomb war, and everything was gone except for a few cockroaches and a giant scorpions.
Right. Yeah. It was a fun movie. I mean, I was 12 when it came out, so I ate it up. I just thought it was great. And I always loved Jan Michael Vincent in that time period, George Peppard. I mean, it was a great cast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jan was fun. I did two films with Jan too. Of course, he was in Hooper.
Yes.
Also.
Yes. Hooper, a terrific movie. And then the last one I want to ask you about, before we jump into the book, is Stir Crazy. Was it fun to work with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor? And did you have anything to do with the chicken suits?
Well, a little, but not a lot.
Okay.
Mostly costumes.
Right.
And Gene Wilder, again, was one of my favorites. I was lucky enough to do three films with Gene. And he was such a nice man. And nothing like his strange character usually played in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Pryor was going through some really tough times. As you may recall,
yeah,
it was right after filming that he lit himself on fire.
Yeah.
And but I like Richard. We get along well. I saw him after his accident. And it was a tragic end for a very talented guy.
Yeah, and Stir Crazy is really a funny movie. And it must have been kind of fun to do, like, the prison scenes as well.
It was. And, of course, we had a marvelous director in that film. Don't forget Sidney Poitier directed that.
Yeah.
And what a gentleman he was. I mean, it was all the way around. It was fun to work on. The biggest problem we had was getting Richard to the set.
Yeah.
And once we got there, it was nothing but fun.
Right. And I remember seeing, I'm a Richard Pryor fan my whole life. And I remember reading about some of the trouble that he was going through during that time period. And he was a challenge to work with. But you know what? The outcome, you can't tell from watching the movie. When you watch the movie, it looks
right.
It just looks great. And that's the whole point. Yeah.
That is. And it's the magic of movies. You know, you're going to get the footage, shoot the footage, and put a film together. And you never know what the problems were. Putting it together, like Le Mans.
Yeah, well, and that takes us right to the book. That takes us to Le Mans in the Rearview Mirror is the name of the book. Steve McQueen, Le Mans in the Rearview Mirror. And Don, you worked on that film as property master, and then you ended up writing this book along with Marshall Terrell. Tell us the beginning of Le Mans. It all started with Steve McQueen, correct?
Right. Steve wanted to do this film for over 10 years, and he didn't have the clout in Hollywood to pull it off. After Bullet... and he was then the number one box office star in Hollywood. He had the clout. The film was going to be made by Warner Brothers, and for some reason, they backed out of it at the last minute. Maybe they had a crystal ball. I don't know. But it was picked up by Cinema Center Films, and they thought they'd died and gone to heaven. Steve McQueen, a racing film? So they jumped in with both feet. The only problem is, and probably the reason Warner Brothers backed out, is there was no script.
How did that start? They developed it. How did they develop the script?
Well, when you read the book, you'll see we never really had a coherent
right.
script during the whole picture.
Right.
But they got John Sturges involved. And of course, John Sturges had a long history with Steve, The Great Escape and Magnificent Seven. And they knew they could work together and needed somebody strong like Sturges because they knew how McQueen would try to take over. Well, they bumped heads from day one. Never did get their head together on a script. And we started shooting because we had a deadline. The race was a certain date. We were filming the race. And we started shooting without a script, without a finished script, just a bare outline.
Yeah.
And we shot for about 6 weeks, no script, without a leading lady, not one word of dialogue recorded. And finally, Sturges had enough, and he left the picture. And the studio, Cinema Center Films, took over and basically put Steve in his place and said, you no longer have control. It's no longer your movie. It's our money. We're going to make the movie that we hope to set, you know, that we set out to make.
Yeah.
And they brought in a new director, Lee Katzin. And the problem was, because we had no script, we had three different versions being typed out every night and handed over to the crew, trying to figure out what we were going to shoot the next day.
Yeah. Can you hang on for a second? Hang on for a second. We got to take a break for a commercial, Don, but I want to pick it up right there when we get back, okay?
You bet.
All right. Don Nunley is with us, a prop master who's worked on many, many films, been in the business since 1959, and he's the author of the book Steve McQueen, Le Mans in the Rearview Mirror, which is a great coffee table book about the making of what is now a pretty legendary film, Le Mans, and it is also just a beautiful book with a lot of great, great pictures and memories in it, too. So we'll talk more about that coming up right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. My guest is Don Nunley, who's the co-author of a book called Steve McQueen, Le Mans in the Rearview Mirror, which is a behind-the-scenes story of the making of a film called Le Mans. And it's got tons of unseen photos and just it's unbelievable. And it's about the making of this of car racing classic. It was not an easy movie to make. And before we took a break, Don was telling us, Don, you were saying that it was difficult. It was a difficult shoot on many levels. You started without a script, and then you started getting three different versions handed to you guys in the morning, and you didn't even know what you were going to be shooting. Can you pick up from there?
That's correct. And, you know, most films have their problems, but this one was doubled or tripled. We were shooting a race or a film, a story that takes place basically in 24 hours, and the cars in the race change dramatically during those 24 hours. They get dirty, they get fender benders, they get broken this and that. And because we were shooting the race, or restaging the race, we didn't know what hour of the race we'd be shooting until sometimes just hours before they were going to shoot. And it was my job to try to keep those cars in continuity of how they appeared in the race at that time. Mm. Because we had shot the actual race and we had some footage we were matching to. So that was a nightmare. Steve was pretty uncooperative once he lost control of the picture, but he did finally show up and do what he was told. His idea was to make a documentary about racing, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The studio, of course, had more in mind a Grand Prix type of a movie with a great story built into the racing.
Right. And so when you guys, it was supposed to be, what was it? It started out as a 6 week shoot, but then it ended up like, you know, five months later.
Yeah, I was almost 7 months before I got home.
Wow. What was happening in between that time period? I mean, obviously you guys were having trouble with your star, trouble with continuity issues and things like that. Did the producers come in and give a lot of notes and change things?
Well, what happened when John Sturges went home, they shut the picture down for a couple of weeks, deciding whether or not they would go ahead and finish it. That's when they brought Lee Katzin in. Bob Rosen from Cinema Center Films, head of production, came in, and the producers on the film that were old Steve McQueen buddies, guys, they'd worked with him for years, Bob Reillier, Jack Reddish, he blamed them for everything, so he no longer spoke to his old friends. He fired his agent. He'd found out that he was on the Charles Manson hit list at that time. He was going through a divorce with Neely, who he'd been married to for 15 years. So it was there was so much going on in that film that you could have a soap opera about the film.
Yeah. And you cover it all in the book. And I want to mention you also cover, you know, when the film was finally finished, and I talk about you seeing it for the first time and what that reaction was.
Well, you know, I tell everybody, you go to see any movie and you sit there for an hour or two and you enjoy it or you don't and you go away and it was just a movie. I had 7 months of my life in this thing.
Yeah.
And I worked my butt off. And so I was not disappointed in my work in the film because I thought the film worked technically. The race footage is amazing.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed because the story was certainly not going to grab anybody in the audience. And it turned out that it was 27 or 28 minutes, something like that, without a word of dialogue, just a narrator describing what they're about to see. It just didn't work for general audiences. And like I say, I always look at a picture two ways. Was I happy with my work? And am I happy with the film the way it turned out? I felt great about Little Big Man. I didn't feel so good about Lamont's.
Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the feel for through the entire crew, correct?
I pretty much know. You know, the crew consisted of only a few Americans, a lot of French, various nationalities, a lot of race drivers from the top race drivers in the world worked with us every day. I mean, Joseph, Brian Redman, Derek Bell, Jackie Ickes, you name it. They were all there, and they were terrific guys. And, you know, they did a great job. I'm so glad we made this film before they realized they could do this on a computer.
Yeah.
Because every shot of the film is real.
Yeah, no, it is.
And it's exciting stuff.
It is. And let's talk a little bit before we let you go about the legacy of this movie. Now, as you know, you talk about in the book that when it came out, and I remember when the movie came out, it was a bit of a disaster and no one went to see it. Steve McQueen didn't even show up at the opening. But yet now, as you said, 47 years later, people love this movie. There is a huge following for this movie, and it's considered one of the best car racing movies ever made. And you talk about the legacy in the book. Talk a little bit about it here.
Well, obviously, I'm thrilled that now people recognize it. You know, when you put your resume down and you put down films you'd worked on, what people ask you, now when I mention Le Mans, their eyes brighten a little bit.
Yeah.
And it makes me happy that they do because it's kind of vindication for all the hard work we put in. I just wish Steve could have lived long enough to see that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's great. It's really, really great, Don. Congratulations on it. And like you said, it covers everything. All the stories are great, and the pictures are unbelievable, and the way it's laid out, it's a tremendous book about a movie that now has a great reputation. And I think Steve McQueen would have been proud.
Well, I'm very happy to have been able to talk to you about it.
Okay. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, there you go. Don Nunley, everybody, the co-author of the book, Steve McQueen, Le Mans in the Rearview Mirror. Great stuff. All right, we got to take a break here on 720 WGN.